Good morning, everybody. This is Annie back from her little jaunt in Hong Kong. How are you, Tobias?
Yeah, good, good. Good to have you back.
Yeah, it seemed like a long time ago. I was just saying to Tobias that the weird thing about Melbourne, I went to Hong Kong for a week and my sinuses cleared up, came back to Melbourne, they're completely blocked again. So, hooray.
Those cursed ornamental pears.
Exactly. Lovely day outside. Interesting weather throughout the week, of course. We had the wild gales. And if you were just caught up with Stick Together, you would have heard that there's more on the way.
Yeah. Lots of, I mean, we saw the damage that was done here. Two friends were on the Frankston Pier. They passed away, swallowed by the swells. And in New Zealand, there was quite shocking videos of people getting blown into oncoming traffic. That's how strong the force was. They are okay. They didn't get hit by the oncoming traffic, but still very dangerous stuff as branches snap and people die.
Yeah, the weather can kill you and nature doesn't care.
Yeah, well, it's not nature's fault, huh? When Woodside opens up new facilities.
And say that it's absolutely essential for the economy. Before we get on to that, let's go back to Sunday and the violence expressed by the police against anti-fascist people rallying against the collection of a motley crew, I'll have to say, of what do they call themselves?
The March for Australia. Who's they've just announced that career racist and Zionist shill from the UK, Tommy Robinson, is set to appear in some form or another at a rally at their next rally in November. So I sincerely doubt that he will get let through customs if they're not letting right-wing agitator Candace Owens through. But stranger things have happened when the Zionist lobby is involved. However, on Sunday, saw them at probably some of the most reduced capacity they've been so far. So in a movement that started with, we can say, tens of thousands on the street in August 31st.
Across the country.
Across the country as well. Here, by, 3 months later, not even, they're down to 2,000 people due to internal squabbles. The interesting thing was how prepared police were to deploy asymmetrical and indiscriminate force and trigger events that they could manipulate, and with a media class that was more than happy to help them smear everyone involved. It's hard to think that this was not the thing that they wanted to do, was to put the anti-fascist movement back in the box of being the rabble-rousing mob. Previous to that, we had...
It was fascinating because when IMAC happened, there was not a big enough group of people protesting for the police not to look ridiculous when they started to use some of the militarised weaponry that the Victorian government had supplied to them. Now, they call it the Allan government, but this has been going back quite a while, you know, so they've been given a whole arsenal of weaponry that are military style. And on Sunday, they actually used rubber bullets on people and then had the gall to stand up in front of a press conference and hold up a rock and say, oh, they hit us with rocks, which I'll have to say, in my experience, I've never seen anybody at any of the rallies throw rocks at cops.
Regardless of whether or not rocks were thrown, which, I mean, what's a rock to a gun?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what really happened is that police shot tear gas canisters and flashbangs next to a reporter's leg and cut open their leg, so much so that they had to go get hospital treatment afterwards. There's video footage of cans being tear canister cans and smoke and flashbang canisters being launched right at people's legs. So with the intent to create panic and physical harm.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an outrage that the police can stand there. There's amazing footage of the police standing there with their cans
of OC
spray, just indiscriminately hitting it, you know, spreading it across everybody. But the beauty of it was that the people brought umbrellas.
Yeah, they were much scorned by the umbrellas, so much so that when they picked people that were frustrating them, they pulled off their masks and sprayed about 5 centimetres from people's face to ensure that they were punished for their
temerity to wear a mask, which, of course, remember, the targeting of their legislation is one of their elements was to ban people using masks. Now, of course, people who are ill are saying that that just discriminates against them, their ability to actually demonstrate their political views. But in actual fact, it also stops the police and the government from using their technology of
mass surveillance.
So, and also, what? Stand there and let us spray you with OC spray. How dare you defend yourself?
Yeah. And
that's
the important
outrage.
And the important thing is that the real enemy here is the police.
Yeah, the police were violent.
Is the fact that the police can call an entire city a designated area for whatever reason they like and stop and search everyone and create situations where they are unsafe towards general public and then somehow have wall to wall media coverage of them complaining. And then what happens the next day is
before we leave that, they were, as you said, asymmetrical. They clearly targeted people who disagreed with anti-immigration racists, and then went around saying that the other guys were really well behaved.
I'll say, look, I spoke to a lot of the March for Australia people. There's a very weird group in there, and they're not nearly as political as people would like them to be.
Well, they're not.
The people who are political are the police.
Yeah.
They're the ones that are enacting political violence on regular citizens, and they're the ones that are taking regular taxpayer money to take $10,000 trips to Tasmania because they can't even be bothered to take a commercial flight like the rest of us.
Extraordinary. And as someone was pointed out, these ordinary cops get paid about $100,000 a year.
Yeah, and they're always complaining, but Sunday penalty rates are pretty good for them.
And, of course, some people like a stoush. Go on, what were you saying?
About the helicopter ride. The police commissioner I'm not sure he's the commissioner. He's a senior member of the police force got stung, using the police helicopter to cross the Bass Strait at a cost of $10,000 to the taxpayer, which he said, "Oh, we all make mistakes sometimes, and I just made a bad decision." Well, if he's been caught once, how many times has he really used the helicopter on our dime?
filthy, I say. All right, we've got a little bit of an excerpt from a speech done by Debbie Brennan, Radical Women. She was at the Homeless Persons Union's rally on the 21st outside the Melbourne City Council, which we'll be talking about later in the program. But she was talking in particular in response to what happened on the Sunday and what we should be thinking about for positive change.
Hi, it's great to see so many people here tonight and even more people for the Homeless Persons Union Speak Out. Kudos, respect, and many, many thanks to the Homeless Persons Union for holding their Speak Out and also to the Defend Dissent Coalition for following on with this part of the Speak Out in solidarity and also making the links between the issue of homelessness and the right to protest. I'm Debbie Brennan. I'm a member of Radical Women. Radical Women is a part of the Defend Dissent Coalition, and I'm speaking for Radical Women. The fact that we're standing on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation really strikes home. It says a lot. As both Robbie and Meg said earlier, this is the sovereign land. This is the sovereign authority, not the authority of those who stole this land. And it's very telling that we are being subjected to the power, the armed power of the Victorian government and the state through their police and, well, eventually their security guards, when they have no authority to do so. The state government and the Melbourne City Council, they don't want gatherings like this. People have already said they don't like it because business doesn't like it, and that's more. But our growing protest over the last couple of years also scares them, because they see us organizing, us who are homeless, who are unionists, we're fighters for Aboriginal justice, we're fighters for climate justice, trans and queer justice, and for Palestine's liberation. We threaten their idea of stability and quote unquote social cohesion, which is totally dictated by the interests of profit, certainly not by ours. So they're ramping up the powers of the police and security patrols to bring us under control and to restore order. We've watched police violence intensify as our organizing has gotten stronger. So the brutality of the cops against us on Sunday was a taste of what's expected to come. And if the government bill passes, it will get a lot worse unless we stop it. Sunday also made it crystal clear whose protest rights are permissible and whose aren't. We've watched the police praise the rally of the far right and the fascists for being peaceful and cooperative and engaging with the police, and demonize the left as dangerous. Now, this speaks volumes, as we obviously know. They're saying that those who protect the capitalist status quo, which the far right and fascists do, can have the streets. Those who challenge it lose that right, and the state will use its power to come after us. We have been warned. All of us here are familiar with the police role in this system. None of us has any illusions about its neutrality, about its community consciousness, and whatnot. We know their role in the system, and we expect their violence against us. But the thing is this, we have to demand, we have to stop it. We don't have to take it. We have to challenge it. Look at the Homeless Persons Union, who are in there right now demanding the rights to safety for homeless people. We need to stand together, which means that we together claim and exercise our rights to do so. In Victoria, there is no body of accountability for the police, except the police. Our movements have to demand it, and we have to organize for this. We have to call out their violence every time and challenge it, like the millions across the United States who are doing that right now. We should take a leaf from the book of the First Nations movement, which has resisted and organized relentlessly against deaths in custody. Let's join their call for police to be held accountable to our communities. In the deaths in custody movement, there's a call for elected community bodies with powers to investigate, to charge, prosecute, and punish violent police conduct. This is a demand that is immediate, it's concrete, it's logical, and it's powerful. It flips the whole narrative. And when we unite for it, we would show the collective power not seen before. So we've got our work cut out for us. What the powers that be are scared of, we should be very proud of. The last 2 years have shown us what we're capable of. So let's do it, let's unite, let's fight. Thank you very much.
And that was Debbie Brennan from Radical Women, who was speaking at the Speak Out for homeless people outside the Melbourne City Council before they were having a meeting around the plan that they've got to institute a $2 million plan for security guards to move on homeless people in the city.
And not only that, they also have a plan to put on the what they dub safe city, smart cameras. Nick Rees has a plan to that. We'll link to a petition in the podcast notes that you can sign. You can let Nick Rees, no cameras, no surveillance, because as my professor pointed out, you know, what are cameras really going to do to someone that's having a mental health episode? They're not going to discourage anyone from engaging in violent action. What they're going to do is surveil people. And that's what they intend to do.
That's the intention.
We were in the city the day before yesterday at the public housing meeting that was held at the Capitol Theatre to hear what was said. There was an interesting panel of 15 speakers that gave 3-minute little speeches about their specific
viewpoints.
Yeah, a lot of architects, a lot of people that had spent quite a lot of time, PhDs, research thesis, or otherwise their own time to investigate other ways to refurbish a building. And it was good that we were in the Capitol, like you were saying off the air before, that the Capitol Theatre had been refurbished, and that the benefits that it contributes to the community after it's been refurbished rather than pulled down and rebuilt is way not only more cost effective, but actually retains the beauty of the original building and reproposes it to a new generation. And that's something that a lot of people have spent a lot of time in regards to the public housing towers. But what can be said after that meeting is that the plan that the government is wanting to undertake, which is $5.2 billion of worth of a price tag, they're happy to pay that price tag, because there's contracts in the demolition, there's contracts in the landfill, there's contracts in the every single part of that. They're not interested about the price tag. The price tag is the thing. Everything is a speculation. They got a little market for everything. So people need to act accordingly. It's important to know those numbers, because they're the things that are going to sway voters. But coming out of that meeting, the real thing that needs to happen is more community organizing and more community coordination. So if you're listening to this first time, subscribe to 3CR, come in, volunteer, go out and get some audio, go out and talk to people, because that's the work that needs to be done. Especially as we saw this week, Albanese smiling like a little lapdog as he shook Donald Trump's hand and sold off the only bargaining power that we have as a country towards America for peanuts. Our rare earth minerals going off to America while they have still tariffs over us. You have Trump in that press conference saying, oh, well, they, being us, badly need airplanes from us, and we're the only ones that can give it. Yeah, well, how about we build some?
Yeah, Australia and United States have signed a landmark critical minerals deal with both countries to contribute at least $2 billion, $3.1 billion Australian dollars, to rare earth projects over the next month. The framework announced on earlier this week is designed to secure a critical minerals supply chain for semiconductors and defense technology as China tightens control over global supply. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese signed the deal with US President Donald Trump at the White House, describing it as, and this is in inverted commas, really significant day for both nations.
Yeah.
It's like play school, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's funny, I gave a presentation on 3CR being one of the organizations that actively pushes back against neoliberalism as part of a uni project this week. And I showed them the little documentary, and it's funny. It says, you know, F the ABC, give the money to us. And I think what better time than to do that, because even the ABC was saying, oh, great success.
Great success. Yeah. Great success. It's interesting because it ties in with the AUKUS deal, of course. Undue Influence is an online media outlet, and it's got a rather interesting article called AUKUS, Revolving Door, Spiralling Down. Ahead of the launch of a new database on the Australian military industrial complex, we document the farce that AUKUS has become. It is clear to many that AUKUS, in particular, its early fulfilment stages, our language, it's so tired, is become a debacle. In February, Defence Minister Richard Moles lauded as a very unique tautology arrangement Australia's a gift to the United States of $4.7 billion to bolster America's struggling submarine output, highlighting that such an arrangement hasn't been seen in other defence pacts globally. Well, of course not. Who gives money to the supplier before they've supplied? Of course, such an arrangement hasn't been seen elsewhere. Most other countries wouldn't agree to hand over this massive sum without ensuring there were provisions for a refund should the promised submarines fail to arrive. In an inept performance in Senate estimates in June 2024, Vice Admiral Jonathan Meade, head of the Australian Submarine Agency, woodenly refused to answer a straightforward question from Green Senator David Shoebridge about whether the agreement Australia has struck with the US contains a clawback provision which the promised submarines failed to be supplied. It is thus obvious that Australia has no contractual way of recovering its money should the current or a future US president block the transfer of the submarines, as the US president is entitled to do under US legislation. It goes on, this article, to talk about the revolving door between politicians and their embeddedness with weapons manufacturing companies like Thales and others. So they're making policy with these begemoth corporations that create perpetual war at our expense.
Yeah, and especially chilling is in the Senate estimates. Friend of the show, Professor Emily Foley, sent me a video about the guided weapons system and explosive ordnance team releasing a cookbook that was discussed during the Senate estimates that they were all laughing about. Or was that you, Admiral, with the pizza, with the pasta maker? And they're all laughing about how in the opening lines it says, we recognize that food is something that brings us together. This is the cognitive dissonance that these people are operating under when a guided weapons and explosive ordnance team can put together a cookbook and it gets talked about on our dime at the Senate estimate.